Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. Despite his training in the New York jazz world, pianist Robert Glasper doesn't want to be defined exclusively by the jazz label. He won a Grammy for his 2012 genre-crossing album Black Radio, which fused jazz with hip-hop, soul, and R&B. He produced the music for Don Cheadle's movie about Miles Davis, and his new album, Everything's Beautiful, is inspired by the legendary Davis, another jazz player who defied labels. Glasper samples Davis's original tracks, composes around them, collaborates with everyone from Erykah Badu, who we're hearing now, to Stevie Wonder. This hour On Point, the pianist and producer Robert Glasper reinterprets Miles Davis. You can join us on air, online. What's your question for Robert Glasper? Are you listening to his new album, Everything's Beautiful? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from New York is Robert Glasper, Grammy-winning jazz pianist and recording producer. His new album, Everything's Beautiful, with songs inspired by Miles Davis, is out now. He also scored Don Cheadle's Miles Davis movie Miles Ahead. And Robert Glasper, welcome to On Point. It's a great pleasure to have you. I'm very excited about this conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I want to just start off. I want to make sure we leave a lot of room in this hour, not only to take listener calls, but to hear a lot of music. But let me start with this question. I mean, it seems like a gutsy undertaking, reinterpreting Miles Davis. When you were asked to do this, did you jump at the opportunity? Were you daunted at all about taking it on?
Actually, when I was asked to do this, I was asked to do this in the middle of while I was scoring the movie. So the scoring of the movie was the harder of the two.
Hmm.
So when I was asked to just reinterpret the music, that was the easy part for me because the movie was the hard part.
Interesting.
So I was like, oh, finally something easy. Yeah, I could do this. I could do this. You know.
So say more about it. We're going to talk more about the movie later. But why was it? What was so hard about scoring the movie?
I've never scored a movie.
I see. So there was a learning curve.
It was a super learning curve. And, you know, I was in Europe most of the time while I was scoring the movie. So I was on tour in the middle of while I was scoring the movie, which is another hard part.
Right.
And it's Miles Davis, which is the whole, that's when the finger biting comes in. It's like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? You know?
Yeah.
Now, so it was all that stuff.
You know? Now, over the years, there've been lots of salutes to Miles Davis. You wanted to do something different with this CD. What did you want to do? What did you want to avoid?
I want to avoid being redundant because a lot of the tributes you hear for Miles have been kind of redundant, and you've heard it before. And, you know, and I didn't want to do that. And what I wanted to do, I wanted to introduce Miles to a younger audience that are not jazz fans for the most part. You know what I mean? So this record really isn't for the jazz fan. I hope jazz fans like it. You know what I mean? If you don't, that's fine. You know what I mean? But this record isn't for you. I didn't want to preach to the choir.
Right.
A lot of people when they do tribute albums or whatever it is, they're preaching to the choir and they're not broadening the audience.
Yeah. So if I understand,
fan base.
Yeah, if I understand, you really, I mean, you don't sort of, you're not in love with the idea of producing music for the jazz purist, right?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, if that's what it's for, then okay, if I'm doing a jazz project and it's for jazz, the jazz purists, for the jazz audience, then okay, then that's what I'm doing. But this, in this particular situation, you know, they asked me to do it specifically because I have a broader audience than probably most jazz musicians, you know what I mean? And so this album was to reach a broader audience, which it did. You know, it's number one in the jazz charts. It's number five on the R&B charts and number 10 on the hip-hop R&B charts all on Billboard at the same time, one album.
Wow, that's fantastic. So, that must make you feel great.
It's awesome, you know, and that's kind of been my thing, because that same thing happened with Black Radio, both Black Radio albums. They all debuted on the jazz charts at number one. At the same time, they debuted top five on the hip-hop R&B charts.
Yeah,
up there with Rihanna and Drake, literally. You know what I mean? So that's, I feel like that's what I'm here for. I feel like I'm the bridge. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what I like to do. You know, it's kind of, I feel like it gives jazz a new breath, and it really just broadens the audience and opens people's minds a little more, you know?
Listeners, we're talking to Robert Glasper. He's a Grammy Award-winning pianist and producer. His new album is Everything's Beautiful, Reimagined Interpretations of the Music of Miles Davis. What's your question about this reinterpretation? We're going to hear a lot of music. What's your question about Miles Davis, about Robert Glasper? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Robert, let's listen to one of the first tracks from the album. It's called Ghetto Walkin', inspired by the Miles Davis song, The Ghetto Walk. And your longtime collaborator, B. Lowell, is featured. You called him in your album notes your favorite vocalist of all time. So let's take a listen.
Suspicious Black Melon.
Ghetto Walkin' from Everything's Beautiful, Robert Glasper's new CD, Reimagining Miles Davis. You said this track really kicks off the album. How so?
I just feel like it's a, I love the tempo, I love the vibe of it, and I love the fact of what it's speaking to, you know what I mean? It's just, it's speaking, it's it has more of a message that's you know, reflecting the times of now, what's going on with the killings, you know, the police killings and people, you know, just everything in the educational system, and you know, where we, the state that Black people specifically are in now. So it kind of speaks to that, and it kind of sets the tone for the album as well. So I like that.
This I had such a good time listening to this album last night. I just replayed it and replayed it and replayed it while I made dinner for my son, while I tried to get ready for this show. And I got to say, it has a real sound that just kind of finds a way to, it just seeps in. So I just want to say congratulations. It's just,
Thank you.
Wonderful sounding.
A lot of people tell me that they say, like, my albums in general, like, they can study to them and do stuff. You know, they put the album on and they do stuff. You know, so it's awesome.
I think there's a kind of zen rhythm that kind of sinks in.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Robert.
No, I just I like albums to have a mood. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's what's missing with a lot of records. Mood. You know what I mean? And I'm very big on mood, is what I'm saying, basically. I love specific moods for, you know, and it feels like a thought and a purpose, you know, versus a bunch of different tracks that have nothing to do with each other.
Interesting. It's got a great mood. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about how you did it, because one of the things is that you had access to Sony's entire Miles archive, all the individual tracks. And the song we just listened to, you wrote that around a sample from the original Miles Davis song. But having access to all that, that must have been just felt like a treasure trove of, of resources.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. It was too much information, you know. Like, I literally went in there and they were like, you can have whatever you want. I was like, oh my God, you know. So I mean, I have so much. Obviously, I didn't take it all. I have so much. I could do like 5 albums with the amount of – I could do more than that, actually, with the amount of stuff that I have. So it was amazing to just go in there and, you know, I literally was like, pull up. You know, I'd have them pull up some of my favorite Miles albums. You know, I was like, you know, pull up ESP and, you know, pull up Miles Smiles and pull up, you know, whatever, Jack Johnson. You know, all these different albums. And – you know, some albums were in a later period, so there were more tracks to pull from.
Yeah.
You know, because earlier acoustic stuff, a lot of it was just 2-track, you know.
But Robert, I want to play another track. This is the first one. It's called Talking. I'm going to say S because this is a family program. We're not supposed to say the word, but Talking
exactly.
S, the first track on the album. It samples Miles Davis's own voice from various studio recording sessions. It's got another great groove, and I love hearing Miles Davis' voice. Let's listen to a little of this.
You know, instead of day to day, you know, some kind of figure like that, that goes on, some kind of pulse that goes on all the time, you know, but it doesn't sound like day to day.
There's a track from Everything's Beautiful, Robert Glasper's new CD. Tell me why you wanted to include so much of Miles Davis's voice.
Because I think everyone knows what his voice sounds like, but you never really hear him talk. You know? So he has one of the most famous voices out there, but you really don't get a chance to hear him talk.
Yeah.
And with this project, since it's Robert Glasper and Miles Davis, I wanted it to seem like — that's why I also started it off with this track.
Robert, hold that thought, because we have to take a break. I want to come back and pick up this conversation right where we're going to leave it, just for a moment. We're talking to Robert Glasper. A whole lot more coming up. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Scott Detrow. There is so much political news to follow these days, but you don't have to keep up with all of it. You just have to keep up with us on the NPR Politics podcast. You can find us on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking with Robert Glasper, jazz pianist, Grammy winner, record producer. He's collaborated with everyone from Stevie Wonder to Kendrick Lamar. This is Milestones from Glasper's new album, Everything's Beautiful. That's Robert on the keys, accompanying singer and rapper Georgia Ann Muldrow's interpretation of the classic Miles Davis tune, Milestones. You can join the conversation. Are you a fan of Robert Glasper? What's your question for him about Miles Davis? about jazz of the 21st century. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And Robert, before the break, before I had to cut you off, you were just sort of getting going talking about hearing Miles Davis's voice. And this is another song where we hear his voice, Milestones. What do we learn about him? What do we learn about the kind of band leader he was when you actually sort of focus on what he's saying?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, you don't, you don't get to hear how he conducts his sessions, or, you know, you just hear the ending, the end product. And I wanted people to hear, you know, the different metaphors, you know, that he speaks to the musicians so they can kind of understand what he's saying. Because he's not very direct when he says stuff. He doesn't say, play the tom and play the crash on this beat. You know, he's not that guy.
Yeah.
He, like, paints. He paints with his words.
You know what I mean? I was looking at this great quote on this track. I think at some point he says, you got to cool it a little bit, man. I mean, you got to let it carry you.
Exactly.
I love that idea of a band leader saying that, rather, as you said, rather than sort of saying, no, don't play the drum like that.
Exactly. He allows you to be the best you.
Yeah.
And to, right here, he says it right here, yeah.
I mean, you got to let it carry you.
All right, that was well timed.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He was just the best at, you know, being a dictator without being a dictator.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And allowing you to grow as a musician, with who you are. He was always about using people for what they actually can give and who they are, which is why all of his bands worked so well. You know what I mean? And that's the reason why I have him talking on here so much, you know, in the album, because I wanted you to get kind of stuff from his mouth and understand him from him. A lot of people analyze Miles and be like, you know, he's such a, you know, mysterious dude, and everybody has what they want to say about him, but you don't really get a chance to hear him say stuff.
So. It's great, too. I mean, I love the idea. I mean, of course, you know, when we think of Miles, we think of his horn, but you're thinking of a whole lot more than just the horn.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of people hear the album. They're like, I don't hear trumpet on everything. Where's the trumpet? This is not Miles. I don't hear trumpet. It's like, when I think of Miles, I don't even think of the trumpet. You know, that's how big of an icon and how big of a, you know, idea he is. You know, Miles is like, he's an idea. He's a thing. You know what I mean? So it's way bigger than the trumpet. You know what I mean? And that's what I wanted to convey, because all the other tribute albums, it's trumpet heavy, and you got to be real about it. You know, when you're trying to sell Miles to people, you kind of don't want to overdo the trumpet, because everybody's not a trumpet person. You know, the reality of it is, you know, hearing it sparsely is better. You know what I mean? And it translates better to a larger audience when you hear it sparsely. You know, I know that for a fact as a pianist. When I put out, like, for instance, when I put out my Black Radio albums, there's not piano solos everywhere. You know what I mean? There's a very few, but enough to you get the idea that, okay, he's a piano player, but that's not the focus.
I love that.
You know, one of the things, the focus, and all that other stuff. You know?
Right. And it gets to this idea that in great music, often it's the spaces between the music that are just as meaningful as the music itself.
And knowing when to shut up is just as important as knowing when to talk.
So I wanted to tell you about this. So I had a chance last year to talk to George Ween about all those years producing the Newport Jazz Festival. And he told me some great stories about Miles Davis and he said that Miles Davis once said to John Coltrane, why do you play so long? Why do you play so many choruses? And Coltrane, according to George Ween, responded, I don't know. I just keep playing. And Miles said,
take the horn out your mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just love that idea of him having the guts to say that to John Coltrane, who then was
exactly.
just like a megastar. And he was on his
totally.
Way, of course.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
That's right. All right. Well, let's take some. We've got a bunch of callers who got questions for you, Robert.
Oh, I didn't think anybody liked me. This is awesome.
Oh, no. I think you're going to find out our listeners love you. Robert Glasper, Grammy Award-winning pianist and producer. His new album is Everything's Beautiful, Reimagined Interpretations of the Music of Miles Davis. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Lewis, who's calling from Atlanta. Hi, Lewis. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. My question is a two-part question. The first part is a lot of people don't realize that Pio Maceo, Miles' producer, was as important to him almost as George Martin was to the Beatles. And I was wondering if you ever met Tio or talked to Tio.
And no, I wish.
My second part is, were musicians that hung out with him in the 60s and stuff, did you know any of those guys and relate to them or play with them at all? That's it, Robert. Thank you.
You're talking about the musician that hung out with Miles?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 60s and 70s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I never met Teo, but it's funny because you feel like you know him because of, you know, on the end of those, a lot of in Miles' records, you know, when you do hear him talk, he's talking to Teo, you know, he's like, Teo, take another take, you know. That might be my third time ever doing a Miles voice, so I think that was kind of awesome. exclusive here, NPR. The other question, yeah, I've hung out with a lot of musicians who've played with Miles. I'm actually in the studio now. I'm co-producing Herbie Hancock's next record. So I've been in the studio with Herbie at his house for like the last 2 months, and you know, getting so many jewels dropped on me about Miles, you know, and that whole thing. I've hung out. I mean, I've been around a lot of people that Joe Chambers, you know.
Robert, there's a great visual that I was reading about, and by the way, I want to say I haven't seen Don Cheadle's movie yet. I'm dying to see it, but I was reading sort of about a great visual that at the end of the film, you make an appearance with Cheadle as Miles Davis, as well as with Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter, and a bunch of other musicians who knew and played with Miles. And there's Cheadle in character. That must have been sort of a great experience for you.
It was absolutely awesome. Cheadle, when he's in Miles' character, you literally think Miles is here. And I never met Miles, but I remember watching Herbie and Wayne watch Don on a break. We weren't even filming. And Don was on a break, but he was still in character. And I watched Herbie and Wayne watch Don, and I watched them talk about how much he looks exactly and acts exactly like Miles. And Don didn't even know they were watching him. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was awesome to actually see that, because you can't get any greater confirmation than Herbie and Wayne saying, yeah, you did good, you know, when it comes to Miles. So that was really awesome. And then, you know, just all the downtime I had with Herbie at that point too, and Herbie and Wayne just hearing, I should just sit there and listen to them talk. You know, it could be about anything. It could be about M&Ms, and I'd be like, oh my God, that was such an amazing conversation.
Robert Glasper, you were a big part of one of 2015's most celebrated albums, To Pimp a Butterfly, by rapper Kendrick Lamar. So I want to listen to a little bit of that. This is the track These Walls, which you performed on and which you won a Grammy for, Best Rap Sung Collaboration. Let's listen.
If your walls can talk, they tell you it's too late. Your destiny, accept it, your fate. Throw the accessories and stash them on the yard. Take the recipe, the Bible ain't God. Wall telling you that.
So, Robert, I'm really curious to ask, you know, we mentioned you trained in the New York jazz scene, but you're not confined by that jazz label at all. But how does your training as a jazz player influence your work in rap?
Well, it just gives me, I always say, when you're a trained jazz musician, it's kind of like being a ninja or something, like being a Navy SEAL. It's like you just have all this, you have all this information, and you have the tools to do anything. You know what I mean? So when you play jazz, you have the tools to play hip hop, because to play jazz, you have to be technically efficient on your instrument. And there's so many styles of jazz that you're pretty good at changing styles, you know, and different shades of jazz, different textures and ballads and up-tempos and Latin and all these things. I always say a bad jazz musician is pretty much better than any other musician just because to be bad at jazz, you kind of have to be kind of good, you know, just to play the music. So for me, you know, I just have so much in my arsenal. But at the same time, you know, to be a good hip hop player, you have to play that music. You have to learn that music. You have to know that feel. So you have to play with other really good hip hop musicians to really play it correctly. And that's the thing. I've studied both. I've played with the masters in jazz and I've played with the masters in hip hop, which is why I can play them both very well. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when people say they play both, there's a wink, link. One of them is better than the other. You could tell which one they're more comfortable with. You know what I mean? But I was lucky.
And do you feel equally comfortable? Equally comfortable?
Totally.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah, totally. R&B, hip hop, jazz, I'm equally comfortable. You know, I was playing with the Roots a lot when I was in, you know, earlier on. You can't get any better training than playing with Questlove when it comes to hip hop. You know what I mean? Playing with the Roots, Mos Def, Q-Tip, you know. And then at the same time, I was playing with Christian McBride and Roy Hargrove, you know, and Russell Malone and, you know, all these great jazz artists. And so at the same time, so I had double training at the same time. So, you know, that's kind of, and those are just music that I genuinely listen to when I'm not playing. I listen to hip hop and I listen to jazz, you know what I mean? So that's kind of why I can walk those lines and make it work, you know.
And to get, and related to this, and to bring us back to Miles Davis, you know, he was so famous for not standing still. You know, he boasted that he changed music 5 or 6 times, and I mean, there's no question that he changed multiple times. Was he headed toward hip hop?
Totally. Even some of the audio of him talking. Even lends itself, you can hear him talking about it. Like even on the first track on the album, Everything's Beautiful, he says, he's talking to Joe Chambers. He said, Joe, play some kind of pulse that goes on, that repeats, but, and it doesn't break, but it's not tame, take a thing. He was looking for something that was not swing, but it repeated. And you can even hear on some of the other stuff that I have, that I didn't necessarily get to put in there, that he was like literally telling people, hey, repeat this, don't change it, kind of let it repeat, you know. And he was like totally talking about hip hop, but there was just no name for it, you know. And he heard it early, he just didn't know how to say what it is, you know what I mean? So he would just tell people what he wants. And when you listen to a lot of those things, it's totally hip hop, without a doubt, you know.
Robert, a lot more callers. Let's go to Colleen, who is calling from New Orleans. Colleen, you're on the air with Robert Glasper. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you. Robert, I'm such a huge fan of your music, and one thing I like about it is that it samples all of these different sort of genres and histories and makes sort of its own category. And I'd love to know, what do you hope or what do you anticipate will be your legacy in music history from doing that and making something new?
Colleen, great question. Robert.
Yeah, it's a good question. I hope people look back and say he was awesome. no, but I always want to keep it moving. Like, you know, like I'm taking a lesson from Miles, you know, I always want to keep it fresh, keep it moving, and always do things that reflect my time period here on Earth. You know what I mean? I you know, that's kind of what I want to do, and I want to continue to inspire other young musicians to let them know it's okay to be you, and, you know, and incorporate your influences, because that's the only way the music's going to stay alive. You know, jazz will not stay alive if you leave it to the people who are just playing a specific time period, because there's only a certain age group that really live and die by that specific time period. And if the whole genre is defined by a certain decade, you know, or two, then it's going to die soon, you know what I mean? But the more you can make it relevant, not meaning put hip-hop in everything, that's not what I'm saying, but there's other ways to make it relevant and tell your story. So I just want all the young jazz musicians to study the history, know the history, but don't be held back by the history, you know what I mean? But just know that, know what the history is, and tell your story, and that way the music will live, you know?
Colleen, thanks so much for that question. Sam is calling from West Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. I'm a high school trumpet player, and I'm really into my jazz program at my school. And I was just going to, you know, say that, you know, I am obviously around a lot of young people every day. And to be honest, I don't really see a lot of people listening to jazz. However, I do see a lot of people listening to hip hop, and I think that, you know, what Robert's doing is so great, because the real way that we're going to keep this kind of music alive is by, you know, having this fusion, you know, like educating people about Miles through these different styles of music. And I think that, if we put Duke Ellington on the radio, it might not attract so many people, or even if we just put Miles on the radio. But this kind of fusion that he's creating is really a wonderful thing that's going to keep this kind of music alive.
Sam, thanks so much. Robert, it sounds like Sam has got the Robert Glasper memo big time.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, from the very before all the jazz purists, jazz is a mixture anyway. It's a mutt. the genre in itself is a mutt. There's classical music, there's classical influence, there's influence from the blues. You know what I mean? Like, you can go on and on. Like, the genre itself is a mutt. So at what point do they say, okay, now you have to stop adding to it? Who said that? What person said that? Not any of the innovators I know. The only people who say you have to stop adding to it and this is not jazz are people who never innovated the music in the first place.
We're talking with Grammy Award-winning jazz pianist and record producer Robert Glasper. His new album is Everything's Beautiful, inspired by Miles Davis. You can join the conversation, How Do You Know Robert Glasper, from his early jazz piano albums, his crossover hit Black Radio, or his work with Kendrick Lamar. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll go out with Gonna Be All Right from Robert Glasper's 2012 Grammy-winning album, Black Radio. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
It's not a secret. Parenting is hard. But maybe we shouldn't put so much pressure on ourselves.
To get to good outcomes, sometimes you do better by not worrying about outcomes at all.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, host of Hidden Brain. Join us as we explore two very different models of what it means to raise a human.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking to musician and producer Robert Glasper. His new album is Everything's Beautiful, inspired by Miles Davis. It pushes and blends the boundaries of jazz, hip-hop, and soul. We're listening right now to Ah Ya from Glasper's 2012 Grammy Award-winning album Black Radio. You can join the conversation. What's your question for Robert Glasper? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And Robert, we've got still a whole bunch of callers backed up, and I know they're good, so I want to get to them. So let's jump right into a few more. Tommy is calling from Kilmarnock, Virginia. Tommy, you're on the air.
Hi, Anthony.
Hello.
I started playing the trumpet in fifth grade after my father brought home some Miles Davis recordings that summer. I had been playing the cello, but it was too big to take on the bus, so they wanted me to switch instruments. And at a time when my peer group was listening to Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, sort of this very poppy kind of music, I became obsessed with listening to these Miles Davis recordings, these kind of Blue Note era music, and I would play them over and over again and practice the fingerings of my trumpet. Years later, I bought my first book of music with actual notations of Miles Davis, and I didn't know what to do. It was full of all of these kind of archaic scrawlings and bizarre squiggly lines and things that I hadn't ever seen in classical music. Obviously, you talked about this kind of set of tools that a musician has, and part of the reason Miles Davis is so incredible is the way that he used the instrument. He experimented and tried different things. I'm wondering, as a writer of music, someone scoring some complex music like this, how you would interpret these markings, some of them that I couldn't explain as a trained musician.
Wow, really interesting question.
It was written by Miles?
Yeah, Tommy, did you get that? I mean, these notations were written by Miles Davis, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, he's also an artist. And so I know, for instance, when I write, if it's for me, per se, like I'll do little pictures and stuff to show a feeling of specific things, or, you know, kind of like drawing caricatures to represent certain feelings you want or whatever it is. So I don't know exactly what book you're talking about, but I'm almost for certain it was some stuff like that, just things that represent feelings of how you would feel versus seeing, you know, mezzo forte, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? You may draw something else that for this specific feeling you want, it's not necessarily that, but it's something else, but you don't know how to say it in Latin, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Tommy, thanks for that call. Robert, we were talking a moment ago about mood and how important mood is to you, and I just want to read you a tweet from Laura B. She says, most modern albums don't even bother with mood. Kind of Blue is the masterpiece of having a mood. I think I might agree with that, but just a comment there on Twitter about mood.
True. Most people, I sacrifice using not my best solo per se for mood and vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's what people gravitate to for the most part. You know, when people put your album on at the end of the day, when they get off of work, it's not because your solo was awesome. You know, it's because it makes them feel a certain way. When people say, yo, I drive to your music, I study to your music, I take a bath to your music, I do other things to your music, it's because it supplies a certain mood. So mood is very, very important for me. It's not, I'm not necessarily trying to flex my muscles throughout a whole album. It's not about that. When you do that, when you're flexing muscles, you know, you're harmonic or technical chops, that's only for other musicians, you know what I mean? And they don't buy albums, so come see me live.
There's something I want to do. I want to do a side-by-side comparison with some Miles Davis and some of the music you've reinterpreted. So here is Maisha from his 1974 album, Get Up With It. So there's Miles Davis from 1974. And here is Maisha So Long from your new album, Everything's Beautiful, featuring Erykah Badu. And in it, you're sampling the original Miles Davis multi-track recordings provided to you by Sony. Here it is. Oh my God, I love this song. I just want to let it go and not do any more talking. But it's a pleasure to talk to you, so I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. So I understand that Erykah Badu came up with the idea for this bossa nova groove. Is that right?
Yeah, she. I was in Dallas at her house, and we didn't know what we were going to do. I knew I was going to fly down to Dallas. Me and my boy Rashad Smith, we're going to fly down to Dallas, and kind of let it go organically what she wanted to do. So we literally just went to her house and opened a bottle of wine, and she put on a bunch of Miles albums. She was just going through different Miles albums, and we were just exploring, you know. And then she, out of the blue, said, I want to do a bossa, you know. And then we researched, and I hit up my man Vince Wilburn, and it's like, what's a good bossa? Miles, I don't remember Miles recording a bossa. And then we all forgot about this tune, Maisha. He's like, Maisha. So I'm like, oh, great. So then we, I think we called up Steve Berkowitz after that. Shout out to Vince Wilburn and Steve Berkowitz in the building.
What I love about this song is, I mean, it just, I mean, I know this is a tribute to you, but I mean, it sounds like Erykah Badu is just like right there kind of doing this with Miles Davis. I mean,
that's what I wanted it to have. Yeah, exactly. Because later on in the song, you hear the actual, I sample Miles's actual trumpet from the original, and you hear them go back and forth on the melody. So it really sounds like he's in the studio with Erykah. You know, that's what I wanted to happen. Because I feel like if he was here, he would have definitely worked with Erykah.
Oh, so tell me about that. Why do you think they would have connected so well?
Because he likes strong personalities. You know what I mean? He's a strong personality, and she's a strong personality, and they're both big walking middle fingers. And I think they would have totally worked with each other. She would have definitely called him, and I think he would have called her. You know, a lot of people don't know, when Erykah first came out, you know, she used to walk on stage to So What? You know, she changed the lyric, and the song will be ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do, and that was her intro song.
Oh, that's
great. Back in 1997 or 98.
Since you brought this up, I'm always interested in talking to people who love Miles Davis about this issue, which I know sometimes gets tiresome, but I still want to ask you. You use the term big walking middle finger, and sometimes Miles was criticized for turning his back on the audience. And I had an opportunity to ask Ron Carter about that, who just, you know, the great bass player, obviously, who was part of one of his quintets. And I asked him about that, and he said, no, people misunderstood it. He wasn't turning his back to the audience. He was paying attention to us in the band.
Right. Exactly.
And I just love that interpretation. because so many people took it so personally. It's like, he's turning his back. What's going on?
Right. But think about this, though. You're still talking about that.
Yeah.
How many trumpet players always face the audience? You're not talking about that. You know what I mean? Miles is a smart guy. Yeah. He wants to be talked about. And you're talking about it. And that's one of the things that's awesome about him. He knows how to keep himself popping. He knows things to do to keep people talking. But at the same time, when you think about it, everybody else in the band looks at each other except the horn players. Because the horn players are in front of the band. So a lot of times they're looking at the audience. But to really engage in for the music, you know what I mean? I understood. Yeah, he had to turn around and really look at the guys and have a thing with the guys, because sometimes it could be a disconnect with the horn players in the rhythm section. The horn player is one thing, and the rhythm section have all these little secrets and it's like a little club behind the horn player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so Miles wanted to be a part of that, and it was for the actual music. He wasn't concerned with what people thought visually, you know what I mean, as much, you know, but his main concern was the music.
Yeah.
Robert, so that totally makes sense.
We've got a couple more calls. Breton is calling from Harrisonburg, Virginia. Hi, Breton. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony, and hello, Robert.
Hey.
Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to express my gratitude for the type of music you make. I think Black Radio 1 came out when I was a senior in high school, around the time that I was also getting into the roots through the album Undone.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm in school studying jazz composition and classical composition, and I'm a recording engineer and a producer.
Nice.
And yeah, I just have to count you amongst probably one of my most formative musical influences. So thanks for everything you do.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate that.
Breton, thanks so much for that call. Robert, I want to ask you a little bit about the movie Miles Ahead that Don Cheadle stars in and directed. He asked you to score this, as you mentioned earlier in the show. This was the first time you've done this. You told NBC that half of the recordings are Davis originals. The other half were your compositions trying to sound like Miles Davis. So let's listen to one of those. Here's Junior Jam. So that's Junior's Jam by Robert Glasper from the movie Miles Ahead. I'm
now,
not sure.
That particular song is not sung like Miles.
Oh, I thought it was. I wanted to ask you what's quintessentially Miles about this, but no, go ahead.
No, that actually is a character in the movie named Junior, who is a fan of Miles, who, you know, so that's Junior playing. So that's the young hot cat that Miles walks into a club, and he sees this young guy playing, and Miles is kind of mesmerized by this young guy's playing. So that's what this is. Shout out to Keon Harrell. That's actually Keon Harrell, a great trumpet player. He actually is the voice of the trumpet voice of Miles in the movie, and he plays the trumpet voice of Junior on this as well. But that's what that was. So that's not necessarily a prediction of Miles.
I got you.
But it's in the era, you know, of like 70s, you know, mid 70s kind of.
A lot of nice music on this. I want to ask what it was like to work with Don Cheadle, because I understand he was super involved with the music, right?
He was very involved. He's a horrible actor. no, I'm joking. I love working with Don. He's incredible. A lot of people don't know that he's so musical. He played saxophone in high school, you know, and so I want to say he got some kind of scholarship to go to college for saxophone. And he learned the trumpet for 6 years before filming the movie.
Hmm.
So a lot of most of the fingerings and everything are actually correct. Like, I've sat down and played tunes with Don while he's playing trumpet. So this wasn't a fluke. He really like learned the instrument. And I could literally, like, when we talk music, we can actually talk like two real musicians on a high level, speaking with theory and everything, modes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was really cool to be able to do that with him. Sometimes it can be frustrating trying to talk musical terms with someone who knows nothing about music.
On the other hand, I have to ask you, I could imagine that if you're scoring the music and the director is super into music and knows music really well himself.
Yep. It can be very frustrating.
That's what I want.
Was that what you were going to say?
I wanted to ask you if that was the case.
It totally was the case. Because it's easier when one person doesn't really know, because then they're like, cool, I'll take it. You know, fine. Hey, sounds good to me. But Don is such a perfectionist. You know, he'll be like, yeah, I liked it, but could you take that E flat out? I'm like, wait, what? No. You know, so could you replace that with this? Or I was thinking more of a Phrygian mode for this. You know, he could really get in there.
Wow.
So sometimes it was frustrating because I would literally have to do 10 different, you know, interpretations of something. And then he'll be like, that's it. Perfect. On the 11th one. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
how well did he?
That's kind of what it is when you're scoring a movie. That's kind of what it is. And
yeah,
it was really good training.
How well did he channel Miles Davis in your view?
I mean, like I said, I don't know Miles. I never met him. But from what I saw, it was absolutely on point. And from what I know of all the other people that know Miles, like, for instance, Vince Wilburn is Miles' nephew, and Aaron, Miles' son, you know, they're sitting there like, wow, every time. Hmm. You know, like, this is kind of scary. At one point, Vince had to leave the room because it was so weird. You know what I mean? So it's when he makes family members leave the room because it's so reminiscent, you got to say that, like, that's absolutely amazing. You know?
Well, Robert Glasper, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us this hour.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
That's Robert Glasper. His new album is Everything's Beautiful. You can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And we'll go out with I'm Leaving You, featuring John Scofield and Lidice. It samples Miles Davis' voice saying, wait a minute. John Scofield was in Miles Davis' band in the 1980s. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.